Are there any questions or anything to say? I'd like to start with a poem by William Stafford. And he, a little bit like Denise Levertov, sometimes I'll leave out some of the poem and just explain. The poem is called A Message from the Wanderer. Today, outside your prison, I stand and rattle my walking stick. Prisoners, listen. You have relatives outside, and there are thousands of ways to escape. Then he talks about his own when he was in jail occupation, getting chains smuggled in to the jail to bind himself further. And always new plans occurred to me, or the new heavy locks bent hinges off. Or some stupid jailer would forget and leave the keys. Inside, I dreamed of constellations, those feeding creatures outlined by stars, their skeletons a darkness between jewels. Heroes that exist only where they are not. Thus freedom always came nibbling my thought, just as, often, in light on the open hills. You can pass an antelope and not know, and look back, and then, even before you see, there is something wrong about the grass, and then you see. That's the way everything in the world is waiting. Now, these few more words and then I'm gone. Tell everyone just to remember their names and remind others later when we find each other. Tell the little ones to cry and then go to sleep, curled up where they can. And if any of us get lost, if any of us cannot come all the way, remember, there will come a time when all we have said and all we have hoped will be all right. There will be that form in the grass. So we'll probably come back to the poem, but I wanted to give it first. So I'd like to speak about safety and freedom. And to begin with, just maybe finishing the short sentences that I had come with yesterday. So I started with intuition is not emotion. Friendliness is not a two-way street. Inspiration is not excitement. And the next one would be alarm is not awake. Awake is not alarm. take a while to start to feel our way kind of blindly towards awakening in our own experience. Not this sort of idea of something else over there that we'll get to someday. And so I'd invite you to feel for those moments every day of just maybe a little shift or a little relief or a little pause. And sometimes almost a marker of the quality of awake is that sooner or later we'll be like, wait, I've got to get back to my alarm. Probably it's an addiction, like even the chemicals in the body. And we know personally and through many people that we all know how hard, long journey that is. What's cool about that, the hard, long journey of alarm to awake, is that it seems impossible and yet is deeply natural. And so it's not so much about like getting our boots on for the hard, long journey. But more like being surprised that the impossible is possible. And so alarm is a natural physiological state in its place. And so maybe let's get curious about what are the ways that we kind of stake it into place as a continuous, like a continuing bed that we lie in. Sometimes it's easier when we see someone else that we love who's alarmed. So sometimes one of the things that happens at the same time of the person feeling very small, the power of the kind of survival scramble, the kind of certainty that they must stay alarmed at all costs, and they must ignore the costs, then we can maybe take it home and feel. It's so hard to feel because we, let's say for example, when we feel a bit like victim, it's really hard to notice the harm that we do. Because we're in such a hurry and there's so much adrenaline and we've got to get to the end of this first and then we can look around. And so I like this sentence, alarm is not awake, because it's literally true. When we are in alarm, we are not awake. And so we have this great ladder story to go by and this great poem. And part of that coming back into alignment that Meredith spoke about so beautifully yesterday, like that it's not your fault, but there's some misalignment that gives some possibility of that deeply natural, alignment that could maybe slowly, sometimes pleasantly, sometimes painfully come about. trusting that in awake or in awakening, which we could also call innocence, in awakening, maybe trusting that there might be more of a sense of if and when alarm is required. Like trusting our, we could say physiology, but not just limiting it to cellular biology. Trusting our nonverbal selves. Does that make sense? Would anyone ask a question to help me make it more clear?
You said that when there is alarm, we are not awake. Which makes sense to me almost all the time. Except in the moments as you acknowledge when alarm is sort of the appropriate response.
Yeah. So, true, but I think also, like we could just say, yeah, that's true. But I think if we think about those moments where adrenaline was helpful and there was something to do, it wasn't, I mean, yeah, it's the alarm state, but it wasn't really alarming. We were just doing what needed to be done. There's a clear kind of sound, trustworthy moment to moment, no worry. I often think of someone that I know who came on a retreat just after she had saved some lives on a beach in South India. So there's a lot of people who grew up in India not learning to swim nowadays. So maybe if they grew up in the countryside, they might be near a river. It's a river country, and they might learn how to swim. But growing up in the city, often there's a lot of people that don't know how to swim. And then they see the ads and the movies, and they go to the beach like the movies and the ads. And they drink like in the movies and the ads, and they go in the water, and they can't swim, and they get in trouble. And so that happened. And they had gone to this tourist beach, you know, of course they had, because there are these women wearing bathing suits, which is basically like being naked for someone who maybe has never seen a naked woman and maybe is 18 or whatever. And those people, those non-Indians who were there at the beach drinking from their coconuts or whatever, were just drinking from their coconuts and not awake. Except for a few. And this woman that I know who was there talked about the few of the people who did start like harvesting bodies out of the sea and giving CPR, giving mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, and doing what needed to be done. And when they could just feel, this is too late, next body. And there was no pause, like it was just clear. Intuition is not emotion. Friendliness is not a two-way street. Inspiration is not excitement. Or we could, for the word excitement, specialness, drama, whatever. Alarm is not awake.
There is a connection between drama and alarm, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's kind of what we do with this body, mind has this innate intelligence, right? That we're talking about, it knows how to respond when necessary. But what we do with some of that physiological intelligence is to sort of twist it into a style and an identity or a method of safety.
Supposed safety, yes.
Supposed safety.
Yeah.
Which is this barrier. Which is a, which becomes a barrier.
Oh, yeah, which is a barrier.
Or it's just a relaxed physiology in a sense.
And it's cool that we could use the word relaxed even if we would be full on active, running. And I also like this story as a metaphor for our spiritual path. Not from alarm, trying too hard, but when possible, when necessary, being available for that utmost. That we could still call relaxed in a certain way, even if every muscle in our body is engaged. If without alarm there could be a sense of that, like on the first evening, the sense of the preciousness of the evening. After all that, here we are. But with that kind of life or death sense, not the panic. Just the readiness to do what needs to be done, if anything. I have a friend who, he talks to his old man. And what that means is he talks to himself when himself would be about to die. So in his mind, he feels forward to when he's about to die. That's his old man. And when he needs to go to find out what matters, that's where he goes. What do you really think you would wish or need to have done? Said, known, or been. Looking back, like as if through clear water, at we call it my life, but this life. What do you need in that moment? Some people who have an experience of dying and then being alive again in the same body, they mention love usually, and sometimes service. But those words are maybe vague at this point. And so don't let them do your work for you. Maybe contact your old woman, your old man. On a daily basis. So I do keep coming back to love, even though the word is vague and for some people turns them off, etc. But if we could also say, what if love is not an emotion? Or there's that love that's an emotion and there's that another love that's not an emotion. We just don't have a word for it yet. And so the next sentence that I have is, love is not worry. Caring is not control. And we could think about ecosystem, planet, people that we feel as so close to us, we're aware that we care, and then what do? But really letting that kind of somehow those two streams separate, like worry and control, love and care. Culturally, we feel sort of, it's easy to be dominated by a sense that if you care, then you should be worried and you should be in control. And it just skips over sort of the main spiritual work that we have that's in between those two things. Almost impossible to care and not worry and control. And yet maybe we have a whiff or a sense of that almost impossible as being deeply natural. And are we ready for that? Are we kind of ready to be that different from our personalities that are pretty much constructed usually around replacement of care with control? So the next sentence, control is not safety. When we say control, anyway, what we mean is the illusion of control, usually. Or we mean aggression. Does that make sense? When we feel worried, we feel righteous about going to aggression. We feel worried and we care so much. And so we just had to, didn't we? Interfere. Do what was not necessary. So one of the hardest parts in awakening is to get that safety is not control, control is not safety. The illusion of control doesn't help, isn't kind. Is neither awake nor awakening. If what is most needed might be empathy, connection, caring that's alive rather than replaced with control. So empathy, connection, care, and equanimity, which really the best definition that I have for it comes from my main teacher, who said, I could say, don't freak out, as the better word than equanimity. So caring and not freaking out. If that may be what is most needed, what kind of takes care of pretty much everything? How do we let the caring kind of wake up and have us? How do you let care have you? You could say, like, in a more confrontational way, let care control you. Not freaking out. And so I think the several kinds of work have to do with acknowledging pain as painful, which sounds so simple, but is it? Has anyone felt pain today? Physical, emotional, mental, psychological, past, present, future. All of the above. Was it easy? Was it a struggle to let it be felt as painful? Noticing something human that happened instead of feeling pain as painful. That might be a slightly different one of the other kinds of work. I want to hear more. Is that adjustment something basically wholesome? Like, rather than, when I say let pain be painful, I don't mean indulge in pain. Or does it feel like that adjustment that you mentioned is getting some pretense or some denial or some getting away from? That's a great example. What I would say is that that's having felt pain as painful, there was a good response. Like, why would I wait for this to be worse? It doesn't give you points. There might also be other responses too, like, what can we do to put under you? Or how about putting the head downhill? Does that help? Or what? What about lying on your side? Or what about? And that the mind that would be open to what about? Comes from feeling pain as painful. The mind that sees the antelope eventually. That's that awakening mind that is. If we want a point, that's the point of what we're talking about. So your example to me is a good example of having felt pain as painful, simply, and having a simple response that's caring, that's taking life as precious. There might be another time where there was something more important going on, an inner experience, an outer experience, that you felt to stay, though the pain was getting worse. Or it could be a pain that there's not escape from, etc. But in this case, it's one of those, you know your body knows you, and you can get along well. I would say. So sometimes distance can be helpful. And it would be easy to take the kind of bulldozer approach with any meditation instruction, with any instruction. Like, just stay with it. Just feel the pain as painful. And that's not what I mean at all. The thing would be to maybe stay with the situation, stay tuned, like what other responses might there be? So that there's also honoring what stillness can bring to your meditation. If any. It's not that there has to be another response. There might be, probably, often.
I have pain that's confusing. I don't know how to, what to make of it. So I have back pain from my work, and I have that, when sitting I have that pain. And I don't know sitting, I'm like, well, is it just a sign of things kind of stretching and it's okay?
Right.
Am I damaging myself somehow? Am I making it worse? I often, when sitting, come down on the side of it's probably okay because when I get out of it, it feels fine.
Yeah.
But it feels confusing, like, really? Like, I have this whole life, and I don't know myself well enough to be like, this pain is is damaging versus this pain is not. Like, and yeah. So it feels like something. So, and so I just try to have not so much of a response to it, but in the back of my mind, there's this fear, like, am I broken? Am I, like, mm-hmm. am I breaking myself? Does this mean something? So it's,
yeah. Could you hear? Well, there's a few things I would say in response, and one is, I understand that, like, I have pain in my back because of my work. That could just be just a simple sentence with a period at the end, but it raises a question for me, like, is it because of your work? Is there some way of working that could be less painful for your back? Is there some approach that's coming to the work that's what's getting you out of alignment? I'm not saying it would be easy to find. But that would then bring me to the other part of my response, which is what I hear when you say, like, kind of you're willing to have the conversation when it could be about damaging yourself. And I feel like there's other parts of you that are willing and in conversation. Well, it's like, whether it's, like, let's not wait to that extreme. Or let's not wait for that kind of amount of charge to listen. Because then it's really hard to listen when it's like, am I damaging myself? Then I've really got to get the right answer. And, like, kind of more gentle and more inner and more like just today and just in this hour of meditation, what would be of help towards liberation? And then feeling where I feel there, you may hopefully also feel what I feel in you, that you have a willingness to do whatever would be needed for liberation in the way that the woman on the beach was willing to do whatever and willing to let go of whatever was not going to be fruitful, what didn't have life in it anymore. And so I would open back up, like, what about lying down, for example? Or what about, like, not to invite a perfectionist thing about your posture, but sometimes there are ways that the pain in the posture really helps find where there's like a push and an escape. And I think you probably do know. And do listen. and do and can follow that. And have permission to listen. And not only like the wish not to damage, but when you think of your broader life and what you know is important and what's sort of on your plate, that here, the subtle ways that that addresses you and you can address it. And so it may be like gentleness feels like a really full word. And maybe what you expect from your meditation could be interesting to feel in your body, like feeling for what do you expect? And is that kind of worthy, or is that like really from the inner life of what's really possible? It's so easy and just the most common thing that there's a kind of subtle agenda that we have that somehow we still want to tick off and fulfill sort of in a way other people's agenda, even in my meditation, before I would give myself the chance to feel what I have to say, what the inner life, that soft, that gentle being would want to be doing here. And that's a hard practice, but also really so easy. And it's very potent, though hard and easy. It's very, like, so like what I mean is a tiny moment of permission to listen to what you're somewhere in your already, I think, listening to, or within, listening within. To let that be more important for like half a second is, I find, is very potent. And so it's not like a new agenda of like, okay, now all day I've got to be gentleness, like Miss Gentleness, like 2018 or whatever it is. Like half second of letting that listening, that resonating that's already here, be present or something. Does that make sense? Are you sorry that you asked a question or said anything?
Yeah.
Okay. So the last sentence that I had is safety is not freedom. And so I want to keep going back to this a little bit. Noticing all the ways that are implanted, that are in place, that are in action, that are trying to make things calm, make things equanimous, make things be how we think we're supposed to be, that other's agenda. Discovering that is huge, is potent, like even half second at a time, a few half seconds a day sometimes is a lot to process. Because we're so tender inside, and also there's hurts in us, and so now you get to know that it's not just you. And isn't it funny that each of us would start to really believe that it's just me that has these hurts? And we have to address the hurts in their own language. And so the defenses and strategies that we have, like coping, getting by, pretending to have it all together or whatever, trying to catch up, trying to be the best, be better than, whatever. retreating, etc. They don't even have a language because it's very machine-like. And so that's where the feeling the pain as painful can allow the response that's a living response that more often than not is some kind of sense of contact, that's more often than not some kind of soothing. And physical touch is important. So here we're in a situation where it's you and yourself. And however weird it might seem, like a firm touch or exactly the touch that you would like somewhere. Sometimes it can feel, you can feel like a tectonic plate shifting, like maybe in your head, in your neurological or whatever. Of just, wow, I could put my hand where I would like to leave my hand for a while with that pressure, that shape, and for that long, and no longer. It's so much so that we would not get around to doing it. Maybe on day 7 we'll do it. When we start to feel some time pressure. Now it's like, oh my God, it's only day 2. All right, these days, I think this is the longest retreat ever. Several times yesterday, I was like, is this day 1? What? On my first retreats, it was my, like, a main pastime was, like, counting how many hours left and how many days left and always getting tripped up on, like, wait, but day 10, which one is day 10? Because we used to do 10-day retreats. Absolutely. Did you hear what you said? Okay. That's what we do. Like, and these, you know, actually, Gotam himself forbid any image of himself to be made in his lifetime. It all happened, like, I think maybe 300 years after his body was long gone. So they made elephants and they made footprints, for example, as a symbol of that person. In the Yoga Sutra, the definition of meditation posture, as translated by my teacher, is that there is, well actually, and me, through Patanjali, there is a position, at least one, in which your body will happily be still. Position could be movement. In the Buddhist tradition, the 4 meditation postures includes walking. And here, not having to shave our heads or whatever, be part of the rules of a tradition, walking includes dancing. includes crawling, includes moving with the trees or whatever. And we still need like more cushioning for you. I can't see what you're on, but
I'm pretty much maxed out with what I have.
Well, I know, so we're kind of maxed out, but there's always.
I got an extra blanket too.
Got an extra blanket. I'm gonna just pass it to you.
Yeah. Maybe.
Directly, thank you. Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
A couple extra pillows in the cab of Dolphin's truck if you're willing to lend.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's like the stone soup supper. And also the process, or process love affair with stillness includes feeling pain as painful, so that there's a response towards finding what is the way your body is telling you, and what is the way your way of listening to your body telling you. That's not quite the right way to say it, because it's the body mind. Attuning, and it needs for us to feel pain as painful. So sometimes there are things that are uncomfortable that the body mind is like, no problem, because something else is more precious. And sometimes it's like, no way. And it's very important that whenever possible, we don't create the link between pain and meditation practice. As if that's one thing. That doesn't work. Unless there's no other option. Even when there's no other option, it doesn't work. And there's practices that are helpful if someone has pain all the time. From what I understand from people who do have pain, physical pain all the time. Also other kinds of pain, but as you said, physical pain can be more simple to start with. That somewhere is at least neutral. Okay, or even pleasant, somewhere. And just recently in Finland, there was a woman who heard me say that a few years ago and came back on retreat in June, and my goodness, I was like, I'm so grateful that I could pass that on to her. And she's just, and she didn't find that in her body, she found it somehow in like her field of awareness. In front of her was a place that was happy and good and not in pain, and that worked. So I haven't had personally the experience of having constant pain in the body everywhere, so I'm not speaking from experience about that, but I hear from people who have experienced that there is somewhere, and to practice going there. So feeling our need for enough safety, enough sense of reassurance and connection and non-freaking out. And sometimes we need that in our environment with someone else or with other people or in an ecosystem to find that and to remember that. So that's like one part of what we need. And sometimes people who identify as a meditator really don't like to hear that. And that usually means there's some trying to get around, like bypass something painful. Something just simply that hurts and simply needs a human contact. That's empathetic and not freaking out. And so where there are those people, that might be one or two sometimes is a lot. that you may know, being around them as much as you can, whenever that's possible, seems to be, like, is a good thing. It seems to be contagious. But we could also notice that the kind of honest seeking for safety and also the kind of more tricky, insidious seeking for safety and reassurance is not all that we're about. And so just a small example that I hope will start to be an everyday example for you is with a kind of even a little drop of deep rest. A little drop of a little bit more relaxed. Like, even if it's like, I can't get comfortable. It can be a kind of giving up. Or it can be, oh, I just got comfortable. Or just, I'm allowed to just connect with the light on the tree trunk. And let it be as it is. It's not needing to be a perfect tree or even a living tree. It's actually a dead tree. And the light on it is beyond words. So a little bit of rest even if we need way more drops to come of rest, of assurance, of contact, of soothing, of what kind of generally people tend to call safety. Does start to lead us back to something that's different from safety, which is trust. And so enough safety that we drop into trust. Where we're interested in freedom. And so it can seem contradictory that there's some need, just like we need to keep on eating food, drinking water, getting that right quality and amount of sleep, etc. Even though what we are is not limited to biology. Or maybe biology is not limited to our ideas of it. But in that way, like in the poem, thus freedom always came nibbling my thought, just as often in light on the open hills, you can pass an antelope and not know, and look back, and then, even before you see, there is something wrong about the grass, and then you see. That way of discovering, we could say, like from the bottom up, or blindly, something in us discovers, and then we realize that we discovered a way to be more comfortable. A way, oh, I need to have seconds at lunch today, despite whatever my history, da da da, but like, or oh, I had enough, huh. Or whatever. And it can be that just exactly in the poem that something's not quite right, a funny feeling. Yesterday, I used the word disorientation. A It's a funny feeling. There's something not quite right about the grass. And our eyes are right in the right direction. The antelope is right there, willing to be seen. What a gift. And it's like coming from the bottom up. Something not quite right. And we look back. We don't even think about, let me look back. Just something looks back. Something not quite right about, and oh. Oh, it kind of. Just discovering, like, step by step, like, now what is needed? Now what is needed? It doesn't need to be the bulldozer that does what it's told, stay with the pain as painful. Which is not what I'm saying. When there's pain, briefly feel not that it's something wrong with you, but that it hurts. And what is life's response to that? Just leaving a pause and room for life's response. And even more importantly, what feels good, yummy, erotic, alive, in a juicy way. And that's where practice becomes sustainable. Sustaining. Is when we let that have us. What moves you? Not just letting what's painful feel, be felt and responded to. But what feels good, and having enough of ourselves and our energy that's gathering together by not throwing it away, that we accept that much goodness and are moved that way. And that's where we have that sense of, yeah, it's not safe. It's not a reassurance. It's not a closing. It's not a, you know, like this kind of thing can be needed for the part that's jangled and hurt and didn't have anybody at that moment. And it's amazing. It's not too late. It's amazing. But then when there's enough of this in the right time, already there's something that's coming out of the jail. Asking questions and listening in a way that we care, we're not freaking out, leaving space for there, I don't know what to call it. Something comes through. Is there any question or anything to say or share? I have one more story I'll tell briefly. It's in a book by Tara Brach called Radical Acceptance. So if you've read the book, you know the story. And it's about another woman, not Tara, whose mother was dying. And the daughter was able to really be with her mother, and take care of her. And there was not any really feedback that if the mother recognized the daughter or knew what was happening. But it felt like a right thing to do. And maybe there's like so many right things to do, not just like the right thing to do. As part of opening that listening and conversation out or in. But her right thing to do was staying. And attending, and the bathroom, and the food, and the medicines. And the mother really was not outwardly responding in any recognizable way until just before she died. Suddenly she spoke, and it wasn't like, "Thank you so much, my beloved honorable daughter," or something like that. But in a way, it was way better. It was her gift. So if you can just imagine, out of the blue and out of the fog, she just suddenly said, "You know, all my life, I thought something was wrong with me. And that's all she said." Are you full? Shall I read the poem again, or some part of it, or silent? A message from the wanderer, we could say, from the friend. Today, outside your prison, I stand and rattle my walking stick. Prisoners, listen. You have relatives outside, and there are thousands of ways to escape. Years ago, I bent my skill to keep my cell locked, had chains smuggled in to me in pies, and shouted my plans to jailers. But always new plans occurred to me, or the new heavy locks bent hinges off, or some stupid jailer would forget and leave the keys. Inside, I dreamed of constellations, those feeding creatures outlined by stars, their skeletons a darkness between jewels, heroes that exist only where they are not. Thus freedom always came nibbling my thought, just as often in light on the open hills you can pass an antelope and not know, and look back, and then even before you see, there is something wrong about the grass, and then you see. That's the way everything in the world is waiting. Now, these few more words and then I'm gone. Tell everyone just to remember their names and remind others later when we find each other. Tell the little ones to cry and then to go to sleep, curled up where they can. And if any of us get lost, if any of us cannot come all the way, remember, there will come a time when all we have said and all we have hoped will be all right. There will be that form in the grass.